Do you crave delicious, fresh coffee? Well, it is time to switch to Sparkplug Coffee. Sparkplug starts with premium fair trade Arabica beans. They offer blends and roasts to suit any taste, including decaf, half calf, and a rotating seasonal blend for those of you that like a little variety in your life. But the best part is that Sparkplug delivers this fantastic coffee to your home or office within 1 week of custom roasting it here in Toronto so that it always reaches you fresh and at its peak flavor. You can order Sparkplug as you need it, or join the Sparkplug Autopilot Coffee Club for regular deliveries. The Autopilot Coffee Club is not a coffee of the month club. It's completely personalized and flexible and comes with all kinds of member benefits. If you use the promo code TOP100PROJECT at checkout, and that's all one word with the number 100, Sparkplug is now offering 20% off of your next coffee order. That applies to any size order, and you don't need to be a new customer to take advantage. It's time to start making the best coffee you've ever had in your own kitchen. Plug yourself in at sparkplugcoffee.com.
Top 100.
Top 100.
Top 100.
Project.
And action.
Hey, movie buds, and thanks for tuning in to the Next 170 Project, the classic movies podcast that reviews films from the beginning of cinema, well, maybe not quite that early, but close to it, all the way until the present. And again, maybe not quite that recently, but close to it.
We're going to do an episode all about train coming into the station.
Our original intention was to talk about all 123 motion pictures on the AFI's 1998 and 2007 lists of coolest American flicks. Achieved! All those episodes are online. You should probably know that we don't apologize for spoiling movies. I'm the fried chicken lover whose favorite color is fluorescent beige, Ryan Ellis. And here's the homebody who constantly demands I take my ass down to the welfare, my wife Bev.
That's me.
I do like that line. It feels so authentic. Take your ass down to the welfare. Not to welfare, but the welfare. And also, I looked it up. Fluorescent beige shows up as a nail polish. She's not wrong. Ain't half bad. It's decent color. I did love that line, though. Fluorescent beige. I don't know how you pronounce her name. Zosha, so X-O-S-H-A, and then Rokemore, I guess is her last name. She's Joanne. What a lot of life she brings to this movie. One of the many students that Miss Rain teaches. She makes my students rain. Okay, the coming attractions trivia for this week's picture, Precious, based on the novel Push by Sapphire, which I think is it's legally obligated you have to say it all in name. By the way, it would have been called Push, just like the book was, but there was another movie that same year called Push. Do you really get why this would be called Push, anyway? Why this book would have been?
Oh, I think the idea is that it was the push that got her to finally leave her mother's home.
Oh, needed
like,
a push.
What pushed
oh, okay.
her to finally stand up for herself. And,
okay.
Yeah.
So anyway, the trivia. Oscars for writing, either adapted or original screenplays, have been won by black men on 5 occasions, all recently. How many of those guys didn't also direct those films?
So, I've got 3, although I'm not sure if it's technically true, because we have Jeffrey Fletcher, who wrote Precious based on the novel Push by Sapphire.
Mm-hmm.
John Ridley, who wrote 12 Years a Slave. And Terrell Alvin McCraney, who got a story credit, but won with Barry Jenkins for Moonlight. But Barry Jenkins was the director, so I'm not sure if you counted that or not.
No, I see you're getting at there, though. But Barry Jenkins was the director and won with him, so that's why I didn't include that.
Yeah, Precious, based on the novel Push by Sapphire, was the first movie to ever win a black writer a screenplay Oscar in 2009. Shame on you, Hollywood.
But Jordan Peele has won. That was not that long ago. First ever original writer to win that. Barry Jenkins, like you just said, along with McCraney for Moonlight, Spike Lee just
finally won his Oscar
this year. Well, for last year's movies, Jordan Peele was the year before that. So it's happening more often now for non-white people to be winning awards. And John Ridley is a name we're going to talk about again next week because he wrote Three Kings and he wrote 12 Years a Slave, which won him the award. Okay, but back to this movie, and it is The Precious, which was screened at nearly every film festival there is. Then Lionsgate ruled it out 10 years ago in November 2009. The production had a small budget, but ended up raking in over $60 million worldwide. And that's interesting because Oprah Winfrey, who was an executive producer on this, along with Tyler Perry, she said it's a movie that people might not enjoy, but they'll get something out of it. And I think she's right about that, because you can't say you like this movie in the usual way. But is it meaningful? Is it powerful? And is it good? Yes, definitely. Anyway, but remind people what this 10-year-old movie is about with The Precious, and this is ironic, Skinny.
Gabourey Sidibe is Clarice Precious Jones, a black, illiterate, impoverished, obese, pregnant, HIV-positive teenage girl. She lives in Harlem with her abusive mother, Mary, played by Monique. When Precious's pregnancy is revealed, she is sent to an alternative school where she's taught by Paula Patton's Blue Rain, whose bottomless compassion starts to break down Precious's boundaries and give her a glimmer of hope for the first time.
She makes Precious's eyes rain.
I don't think she does. Do we ever see Precious herself cry?
I thought she did.
Does she?
Well, if she didn't, I'm just going to have to quote Tropic Thunder anyway.
She's not overly emotive. She's the stoic one to a lot of other people's, well, mostly Monique's extreme performance.
It's actually interesting that Sita Bae would keep it so tight and insular, because when you saw her on the red carpet and doing other things, when they show the fantasy sequences in this movie, you see her personality come out. So in reality, on red carpets, when the movie was getting known, and then certainly the Oscars, but even just in the movie itself, this young girl we never saw her before is not at all like that. She's not that young, actually. She's about mid-20s when she made this movie.
She's incredibly charismatic. She just has this real sparkling personality.
But in the movie, her character has to have it tamped down. Well, to build off of your skinny, here comes the nutshell. All what you just said, plus some of the characters are Hispanic or immigrants, most of the characters are women, and their teacher's a lesbian. So this is Donald Trump's favorite movie. Also Mike Pence. Their number one film. Definitely had the Blu-ray. They have the DVD. They have it on videotape, probably. They watch it every single day. All right, so the Rotten Tomatoes numbers. 91% of critics like the film. 212 fresh, 20 rotten, for an average of 7.8 out of 10. Pretty damn good. And also 81% of audiences. It won the two Oscars. The screenplay, of course, for Fletcher, and the supporting actress win for Monique. She won trillions of awards for this performance. Seemed like every time she was nominated, she was winning. And I think she also challenges Joe Pesci for supporting actor winner. He was supporting actor, supporting actress for her, for the number of fucks that are used. Mm. She says it a lot. The movie also had four nominations it did not win. Best Picture, that was The Hurt Locker. Best Director, also The Hurt Locker. Best Actress for Sita Bae and the editing. And I mentioned it was Best Director nominated for Lee Daniels. And this was the first time a director for a Best Picture nominee was black. All those Spike Lee movies, especially Malcolm X and Do the Right Thing, no Best Picture nominations. This was the first time. But again, it's happened a lot more often in recent years, including the ones we've been talking about, Get Out and some other ones, 12 Years a Slave. And Precious was 65th at the 2009 U.S. box office. Avatar was number one. Up was number four. We covered both of those in the past year or so. And The Hurt Locker, which we covered earlier this year, was 116th. Okay, after all that, Bev, come back in here and tell us what you thought of The Precious.
It's one of those films like Schindler's List or 12 Years a Slave. That's so effective that it's hard to watch, and it shines a light on this story in a way that's impossible to watch without also shining a light on our own prejudices. It breaks my heart. It makes me deeply uncomfortable. It tells an unheard story. I wish that the filmmaker sometimes maybe had followed Sita Bae's lead and taken a more authentic and less sentimental approach, been a little more subtle about it. But it's still really effective, and it's an essential portrayal of a person that we habitually, as a society, ignore.
Because of all those things about her. She's overweight. She's unattractive. She's black.
She's dark-skinned black, too, and that's important.
Look at Paula Patton, who is black but not dark-skinned.
Yeah, it's kind of curious that actually the villains, there's not really any white people in this movie, and the villains in the film are dark-skinned black people, and the heroes are very light-skinned black people. One of the reviews I read made the point, I don't know if I agree with this or not, but they made the point that if this film had been directed by a white person, it would be lambasted for being racist, for portraying so many black people, particularly dark-skinned black people, as being villains. The welfare queen, the incestuous abusive father, the poverty, the leeching off the system, and the illiteracy, and the teen pregnancy, like everything about it is all these cliches that I think a lot of people want the community to escape from, but because it was a black director, we see it through the lens of somebody that we know to be sympathetic, I suppose.
Also, Oprah Winfrey and Tyler Perry being producers puts their stamp on it, so they must feel it's okay too. I don't want to excuse movies when they are racist or sexist or any of the ists, homophobic, any of the rest of it, because a lot of them have been in the past and a lot of them will be in the future. But I think it's, maybe not always, but often fair to say, in our story, the father was a rapist of his own daughter. In our story, the mother is a welfare queen who doesn't seem to care at all that that's all she is. Because one thing about this film, as bad as she is to Precious, who is abused in every way you can imagine, by her own mother, it's more subtle that the mother is also sexually abusing her, but that's in there. What is it, come and pleasure me, something like that?
I can't remember what she says, but she's masturbating and she's like, come help mama out or something, and you know what's going on, but it's very subtle, as opposed to when she's being sexually abused by her dad, sorry, when she's being raped by her dad.
Yes.
They show the rape. There is no question. You see him undo his belt buckle, you watch them having sex.
And Mary is watching at least once.
Yeah, it's awful. It is so hard.
And then she later
says,
"You fucked my man." Wow, talk about condoning rape. Yeah.
Some people and some reviews I read argued that Monique's performance shows that she was hurting inside too and showed sympathy for her. I disagree. I believe that Monique played her as a straight up sociopath who did not care. She cared that she had a man, but she is purely evil in this movie, knows when to turn it on, knows how to act for the social worker that's helping Precious out when she wants to get what she wants. And what she wants is for Precious's welfare check to come into her bank account so that she can keep living life, so that she can keep her subsidized apartment. I don't believe for one second, even though she can be very convincing, I don't believe that's anything but a performance, like you always love, an actor giving a performance. Mm. Because every time her guard is down, she's nothing but cruel.
Monique won the Oscar for the scene at the end of the film in Mariah Carey's office, and Mariah Carey's great in this film.
I know.
When she cries, or at least lets a tear escape from Mariah after Mary's big story, she wasn't supposed to, but Lee Daniels liked that Mariah Carey couldn't hold back and thought that authentic moment has to be in this movie.
It's beautiful.
Robert Altman talked about that. The best things in movies are mistakes. I don't agree with that, but a lot of the great things in movies are mistakes, and that was not supposed to happen, so that is a great moment. But that's why she won the Oscar, undoubtedly. It's a grandstanding moment. The characters perform, yet it's also real at the same time. It's both of those things. But in some ways, the better performance that Mary gives is when she is with the social worker, wears a wig, and puts on this whole act that everything's normal here, and the daughter, well, the granddaughter, I should say, because it's Precious's daughter, Mongoloid, whatever, is there briefly because the grandmother brings her over. This kid's never even in their apartment. We never see that kid in that apartment other than that one time. So that performance that Mary gives to that social worker is almost more impressive than the one at the end, when that's performance too, but that's also more real because she is telling things that she feels bad about. This happened a lot last month when we did all the horror movies where I had sympathy for the devil, and I had some sympathy for this devil too. Maybe because you got Mariah Carey crying on screen, and Miss Weiss, Mariah Carey, walks away from her. It's not like she's going to say, yeah, you know what, Mary, after your big story there, Precious walked out on you, but I won't. Miss Weiss walks out too. But I still, at the end, I think you're supposed to feel complicated because a good movie makes you feel that way. Even if it's somebody asshole-ish, you want to see them suffer and they deserve to suffer, but you still have some sympathy because they're still human. The fact that she throws a TV at her head, the first time that we ever see them together, actually, Mary throws, what is it, a brush at Precious's head? Precious is making her dinner, the indentured servant that she is. She's always making this woman food.
Worse than a brush because she knocks her unconscious.
And the first scene?
Yeah, because she knocks her unconscious, and then it cuts to a fantasy scene, and then the next time we see reality, Monique is splashing water on her face to wake her up, because she's lying on the floor unconscious. You don't know what she's been saying before, because she goes, and that's the last time I'm going to tell you that, or something like that, and you're like, but what did you say? She was unconscious, I have no idea. It's actually a really great POV scene of what life is like for Precious with this, not just abusive, but unreasonable woman. How do you win with her?
Yeah, she didn't even do anything to deserve that at all. And then, of course, the TV being thrown at her when she goes down the stairs. Right before that, when Precious trips with the baby in her arms, so it's the new baby, Abdul, and falls. I saw this movie as a matinee, probably in early December of 2009. Maybe 45 of us in the theater, not a big crowd. I heard a woman, I think she's in the same row as I was, scream when that happened. At first I thought, is that in the movie? Is that a really good surround sound? But no, it was somebody in my theater who was so wrapped up in this woman's story, this young woman, Precious, that she shrieked.
At this point in the movie, you've seen so much suffering that you kind of believe that something bad could happen to Abdul. And Abdul is the kernel of hope. Because it is with his birth that she finally says, enough is enough, I'm standing up for myself. You took Mongo away from me, but you're not taking this little boy away from me. I love him. I feel this connection with him. And for someone like Precious, who is so devoid of true love and connection, that has to be meaningful enough for her that she wants to keep it. It's when that is threatened that she finally breaks away. That is the push. Well, you could hurt me, but you can't hurt this little boy. And she tries to kill them. Mm-hmm. She throws a TV from like the fifth floor. It almost hits them, and if it had, that baby was a newborn. He was 3 days old.
Well, I think probably Precious would have been
very badly hurt.
Maybe not dead, but a TV falling from that height, being thrown from that height.
I understand that Mary may have been hurt herself, but to me she is an irredeemable character. I agree with you that the movie is nuanced enough that it makes you feel for her, even if she is irredeemable.
I think the best movies have to do that. They have to find a reason why someone's like that, because there are going to be people out there that are like the horror movie characters we covered last month, like a Freddy Krueger, or we didn't cover him, but Michael Myers, who just do things for reasons that no one can really analyze, no one can figure out. They're just evil characters. But those are also slasher characters, and they're just easy. Just they're the bad guy, and they're fighting against teenagers. Well, Precious is supposed to be a teenager, too. So in some ways, Mary is her slasher. But Mary having depth, I think, makes it more fascinating, more interesting, and can even maybe make her less sympathetic in a strange way, too.
Yeah.
Because you see, but all these shitty things happen to you, and yet you're treating somebody else like this. Your indentured servant. Does she want Precious back because she actually does love her somehow? In her little speech with Miss White, she seems like she's implying that without saying it so much. Or does she just want her servant back?
Oh, my heart is stone. I think she just wants her servant
back. Okay, fair.
And in the same way that the movie treats her very much like a human, one of my favorite things about the way that they treat Precious, kind of in the same way, is that it's super refreshing to me that Precious is saved by Miss Rain and by, I can't remember Mariah Carey's characters.
Miss Weiss.
Miss Weiss. She's saved by them not because, like in some movies, she shows some secret talent or potential, but simply because the right people noticed that she was suffering and wanted to help her. She simply deserves to be saved. Because everybody does. She's a human. If Weiss had gotten to Mary early enough, she would have tried to save her from whatever turned her into this monster. Although, even as I say that, I think about how we meet Mary's mother. And she seems like a nice enough lady. She certainly disapproves of Mary's behavior. She's much, much kinder to Mungo and Precious than Mary is. So whatever made Mary the way she is, it could just be some undiagnosed mental illness, which is another result of poverty.
She's also a narcissist. That's what Mary is in that end sequence, especially we really see that because everything's about her in the end. I mentioned Trump earlier. She's got that Trump thing. No matter what it is, it's got to be about me. Well, not that many things in the world are about you, even in your little circle.
I couldn't find this interview, but I do remember back when this movie came out, and I read a lot about it because I was so fascinated by it and by Monique's performance. She said that she knew people like this, that she had women in her family.
I read that she herself went through it. Maybe I misread that.
With, like, her mother?
I maybe misread that. I also read that she knew about incest. So, in other words, she was a victim of all those things. One thing about this film, too, of course, is that she seems to have been blackballed since. And I guess it's because she didn't play the game at the Oscar time, even though she was winning all these awards and then won the Oscar and deserved to. She was a great choice for it. I wasn't a huge fan of hers. I would see her in movies, and she was that obnoxious, I thought obnoxious, comedian.
She's not your taste. It's
right.
Fine.
But then I see her in this movie, and I'd heard about it, of course. People rave about this woman for so long. And you see the movie and think, they're not wrong. Maybe she's not been a great actor in previous things, or Mariah Carey. But in this one case, they're both outstanding.
Oh, listen, Lee Daniels can obviously get a performance out of relatively inexperienced actors. Mariah Carey, great example.
She's been slammed,
Monique,
like in Glitter, for example.
Yeah, yeah. Monique didn't have a ton of serious dramatic acting experience, but especially Gabourey Sidibe, this was the first thing she had ever done.
And she's only made 10 movies in total.
And this is the tragedy of talent wrapped up in a package like her. She just isn't the Hollywood package.
This was back in the time, I think it was only 2 years they did this, where the best actor and best actress had 5 people come out to present to the 5 nominees. And Oprah was the one that spoke about her and said all kinds of glowing things, as they all do, of course. And she said something like, Gabby, you've got a great career ahead of you. And it must have been the next day when Howard Stern was talking about the Oscars and said, don't lie to her. That's bullshit.
Don't lie to her.
And that is...
And he was right.
Like, being Howard Stern, he can be mean, but he wasn't wrong in saying that. And Oprah was not trying to mislead her. She wasn't misleading her own mind. But come on, you're the one that said, Oprah, or that is... What was it? 4 things. You're fat, you're black, you're poor, and you're...
Dark skin.
No, something else, though, because black was...
HIV positive teen mom.
She had 4 things against her. But anyway, she had those ones I just mentioned. Gabourey Sidibe doesn't have AIDS, of course. The character does. And she does have personality. She's not this understandably tamped-down person. But she was never going to be somebody who would work constantly. She wasn't going to have the Emma Stone career.
If she got lucky, she would get a part on a prestige drama.
Well, she's on Empire. She's been a regular on that show.
Good for her. I hope that gets her more exposure. I hope that gets her more parts. She's clearly very talented, and we clearly don't see enough people like her. We talked about this when we saw Hairspray. That movie rests on the shoulders. And talked about the new version of Hairspray, and we covered it. It is such a great movie, but
Nikki
it
Blonsky.
Would be nothing without Nikki Blonsky. She carries every
loved her
pound of that movie on her. In every way, she just doesn't look like a Hollywood star, but her charisma comes through the screen and then some. She delights you. You just want to see more of her, and we never saw her again.
Doesn't even act anymore.
No, she cuts hair in New Jersey. Now, at least Gabri Sidibe is acting.
Mm-hmm.
I remember hearing stories about when they cast Hairspray the musical on Broadway. They always have to go for unknowns because people who look like that don't even have agents or acting careers at all. In many cases, they're discouraged by teachers, society, their parents, whatever, looking around them. They're discouraged from pursuing careers in acting at all. But there's talent there and there's representation that's clearly missing. And Gabri Sidibe is fucking cute. At the very beginning, she has a monologue as Precious.
A lot of voiceover.
A lot of voiceover, yeah. And she says, I want to be on the cover of magazines. And I thought, you were on the cover of magazines. Gabri Sidibe was on the cover of many magazines. She looks great.
I think most reasonable white men, like myself, would say the inclusion rider thing that Frances McDormand talked about a couple years ago at the Oscars, which I'd never heard of before. If that's what it takes to make people hire somebody who's different than the usual, not just white people, not just men, then good. Because, yeah, let's have more variety and let's have a Gabri Sidibe. Although Paula Patton, apart from the fact she's not white, is basically like that. She's gorgeous, and yet she doesn't seem to have much of a career since around this point. She did Mission Impossible, Ghost Protocol, a year or two later, a few years later. And she was in Warcraft, which succeeded in China, not so much here. She keeps on working. She's making movies, but nothing big. And you'd think that this movie, which had all kinds of critical praise, and she's good in it, that she does some big hits like that. Why isn't she more of a major star?
Yeah, I don't know. You think she would at least get some network
television? So I haven't heard that she's been blackballed, but I feel like maybe she has been. And Monique, we know, has been because she doesn't kiss the right ass,
oh,
I guess.
I'm glad
they still
that
voted
up
for her. It's so funny you read these stories that Monique was blackballed, and yet you think she wouldn't be winning the Oscar if she was blackballed.
In my opinion, it's because her performance is actually that good. But I did a little deep dive about getting blackballed because I'm so fascinated by it because she gave this incredible performance. She was famous before that. Her stand-up obviously has done well since then. She said it was because she did this movie for scale. It didn't have a very big budget. And then it started doing well in festivals. And then they said, okay, well, we have chance at Oscar buzz. So now we want to ramp up the campaign. You don't get paid for that. And she was like, why aren't you paying me for this? If the movie is making a ton of money and you're going to make even more money if I campaign for an Oscar and win that Oscar.
Where's my sniff?
Well, kind of, yeah. And actually, I saw this great interview with Gabri Sidibe where she told a somewhat similar story. It cost her money to do the press tour, especially because designers don't have sample clothes for her. So she had to buy all these clothes that she couldn't afford. She said she was wearing Payless shoes on the red carpet because they weren't shelling out money for these outfits.
I did not know any of that.
For her and Monique both. They don't get designers lending them clothes. They simply don't exist for them because they're fat. So they have to go out of pocket. They have to spend all of their own time. And of course, it's great for their careers, but it's also great for Lee Daniels' career. It's also great for the entire production company that's making a fortune. And when you have Tyler Perry and Oprah Winfrey, two of the richest people, black or white, in the industry, telling you, well, you got to do this for your career. Well, yeah, you have a right to say no. I'm sorry, my time is more valuable.
So she was blackballed by her own people then, more so than the business in general.
Oh, and her and Lee Daniels, they've had, and I'm talking about Monique again now, had it out. They have this rivalry.
Wow.
And Lee Daniels said that he wanted to cast her in the part that he ultimately gave to Oprah, in The Butler. He won't explain why he didn't do it, but she's like, because I pissed him off this one time.
Hmm.
I don't know whose side you're going to take. It's very gossipy. And she has been spilling tea. She didn't at the time, which is probably part of the reason why she still managed to win the Oscar. And she could have just won the Oscar because of momentum, too. She was winning every other award there was to win. Her performance was so good.
But
I agree with
that
this Oscar.
That doesn't necessarily matter, though. Let's not forget
that. I know. But it really was the talk of the year.
The wrong person won the award lots of times in the past.
Somebody and then there's been people who've won every possible other award. They won SAG, Golden Globe. I'm thinking of Mickey Rourke. Everything. And then when push came to shove, Oscar night, he lost to
Sean Penn,
thank you.
Who was a good choice, but Chris and I just talked about that a few months ago on The Wrestler. That's one of the great performances I've ever seen anyone give. Penn was outstanding, Rourke was that much better. And
Penn already won his Oscar.
And he had, and Rourke needed it more, too. And Penn referenced him in his Oscar speech, which was very nice. So our story is set, if you didn't say this already, in Harlem in 1987. It was shot in Harlem in 2008, probably, give or take around there. And other parts of New York, too, but it was actually filmed in the big city, NYC. We also see Precious's illiteracy in the opening titles. And I wonder, and I've never seen this book, maybe you have, is the book written like that? And if so, is it unbearable?
I wouldn't be able to read a book like that. I couldn't read Room because it was written like a child's vernacular and I couldn't stand it.
Because the credits do that for this movie.
Mm,
and then they show you what they actually mean. I can't think of an example right now. The word written would be written wrong, but then it would say written in proper English. And you, okay, I get it now. But if that's the way the book is written entirely, even just a lot of it, because of course Precious does learn to read and to write. She even brags about that, very smartly brags about that. She should be bragging about it. As the movie plays out, she says to her mother, I think, that she's now reading and writing at a whatever grade level. But before it was kindergarten or something, or no,
she
second grade.
Barely. She couldn't even write down the next letter in the alphabet, which is an amazing thing to imagine that a child could be this undereducated. But I do have a reasonably good question, which is that when she gets selected to go to alternative school, one of the things that everybody says to her is, your grades are good. How are her grades good? She says she likes math, but she likes math because she can just sit in the back and be quiet.
And loves her teacher. She's in love with him.
Oh, right. She has a crush on her teacher. But she never says, oh, but I'm adequate at math. I may not be able to read and write, but I'm good at math. And if you can't read and write, then that's a lot of math. There's a lot of word problems in math classes. So I don't understand how that even shakes down.
There are classes you can take, probably less so now, but this is set in 87, where you could be illiterate and be good at things. Gym, for example, which they had back then. Maybe they don't anymore. Music. If there's just a class where you speak, if you had a drama class, I'm just making things up here.
They're not
to make
showing
the point.
This, though.
Yeah. Yeah, but I'm just saying you could be good at those things. But this is not a girl who's athletic or out there when it comes to if she was in a drama class.
Yeah, she's not a musical.
The whole point is that her character is tamped down. So she's not even doing those things. You're right. It's a reasonably good question. They want to make it so that she's got potential. You said before that Miss Rain and also Sherry Shepherd, who's what, the secretary? The receptionist, I guess.
Cornrows, she's called.
Each One, Teach One. She's quite good, too. Sherry Shepherd has mostly done TV. Of course, The View. She's great in this small role. I like her quite a lot in this movie. But Precious does have potential, as it turns out. So, yes, they didn't take her in because she can be a writer and be somebody who can really advance fast. But she can, so it's not like they threw their time away.
I think the movie's pretty clear that her real potential doesn't lie in becoming a great writer. Even though she's writing these journals, that's not really the point. Her potential is that she has the potential to be happy, to heal from the pain, and that's what people see in her. If there's an error in the movie, if there's a criticism that I think is pretty valid, it is that Paula Patton, as hard as she tries, is really just such a cliche trope of the teacher savior. She has truly bottomless patience and compassion and stamina to help these students. They portray the students as all having potential and ultimately being worth the fight. But I bet that when you're a teacher in a situation like that, you get a lot of lost causes, as sad as it is. You get a lot of people who are like Monique's character, Mary, who no matter what you do, you're not going to be able to save them. And all they're going to do is make your life horrible. And are you really going to have the energy and the patience to deal with someone like Precious, who is so hard to reach when she first goes
to the
classroom?
Especially at first.
The first expression you see her make in the film is to beat up one of the other students because she calls her fat or something. I think it takes a supernatural amount of patience to see through stuff like that. And do I buy it? I don't know. I'm sure there's somebody out there who's like that. This teacher saves her, but it's just the flaw in the movie, I say, and that it certainly errs on the side of sentimental. That one good teacher could save somebody who is this far gone.
It's probably for the best that Miss Rain is not white, although she's very light-skinned. Although Mariah Carey's character originally was going to be played by Helen Mirren.
Yeah, I saw
now,
that.
Now, she's not a white savior in that role. That's not what that character's playing at all. But had Helen Mirren, for example, played Miss Rain, then you could say, well, she's the white lady savior. But she's not that. It is a black woman, or at least mixed race, I guess, is what Paula Patton probably is. As far as that classroom, Each One, Teach One, Reach One, might as well be called that too, I think that what really fixes, if anything can fix somebody, or help Precious, would be the other kids.
Yeah, there's a community. They really become friends.
They show up at the hospital when she's had Abdul. She's only there for a few days. The movie makes it seem like she's there for weeks, but then her mother even says something, you've been gone a few days. But in that time frame, we see them in the hospital room more than once, and so is Lenny Kravitz as a nurse. He has not acted that much. Hunger Games movies, he was in The Butler. He's only made some like 6 or 7 movies as an actor. But I think he's pretty solid in this movie. He shows her compassion. He's one of the few males in the whole film in any way, other than guys bullying Precious in the street and people just in the background. But
her
almost
father's
every
kind of ominous presence.
Does he speak,
in flashbacks?
Though? Do you ever hear her father speak?
Oh, he speaks. He says vile, vile things.
I forgot
to
that
her.
Entirely. I don't
well,
think you need it.
I'm just going to let you continue to forget it.
The rape is bad enough. That's one thing I didn't like that Lee Daniels did. A little over the top, maybe when the father is raping her the first time we see it. He cut to eggs cooking on the frying pan. Odd choice. In fact, this movie really does make food so unappealing. Those eggs frying because it's being cut with a rape, but also the pig's feet, which I don't want to eat anyway. But I've rarely seen, if not never seen, fried chicken look so unappetizing.
food often in movies is used as shorthand for love, and I think immediately of Moonlight, another kind of similar movie with similar themes about undernourished child. And then when he meets Mahershala Ali, who is his savior, he's constantly feeding him. And same with his girlfriend. They're always feeding him. He never eats with his mother, but he eats with them because food is nourishment. There's an amazing diner scene at the end of the film. Precious turns that on its head, and food is, in a way, the enemy. Her mom complains about being hungry while she's eating. She's eating the food that Precious prepared for her. Saying, I'm hungry, Precious. She harangues her into eating when she's not hungry, Precious, but then lets her go hungry. Until she eats, until she vomits. When she steals the fried chicken, yeah. Her mom makes Precious provide food for her by shopping and cooking for her, but she can't even make sure there's always enough money for food so that Precious can eat when she's hungry. And she complains to her about it, and then she steals fried chicken and eats till she throws up. Mary will make Precious eat and then call her fat. There's just such a bizarre relationship with food between her and her mom. And you're right, every time they show food cooking, it's repulsive.
One of the things she says she's good at in that classroom with their other kids and Miss Rain is, I'm a pretty good cook. And she probably is, but it's deliberately made to look terrible by Lee Daniels. Although maybe she's not a very good cook and she just thinks she is. Could be that too, I guess. So many movies we've seen lately, so many TV shows too, I guess this is always happening in media, but what is with the vomiting and showing it? Suggesting it's one thing, we don't need to see the shit coming out of people's mouths.
This is Ryan's pet peeve.
So much vomiting.
I never thought about it before, and it drives you crazy, and now I'm starting to notice it. And it is true, vomit happens in movies and TV way more than it happens in real life, especially nervous vomit. When somebody hears bad news and they immediately throw up. That doesn't really happen.
At least it makes sense here because she steals that bucket of chicken and eats all of it. And not even her body can handle that much food at once. In the morning, by the looks of it, too.
She doesn't know how to regulate her own hunger. When you don't eat regularly, you don't understand how to stop when you're full.
Mm-hmm. So we talked about the classroom being a nice part of this movie. It's not necessarily the best part. Because the best part, as hard as it is to watch, would be the domestic scenes with Mary and Precious. But I do like the way they introduce the classmates because they introduce themselves. So that's one way to not have it be a voiceover. And it could have been. There's a voiceover in the movie at other times. But that's how you meet Joanne and Rhonda and Rita and so on in that classroom. And as I said before, all of them are not white. They're all girls. And a few of them are immigrants, too. You got the Barbados girl.
Jamaica,
that's it, right. I like both countries. That's why I thought it was Barbados. Barbados is a great place to visit, and so is Jamaica.
And they all have their own troubles, too. Precious may be one of the most hard done by people there, but I think it was Rita that is a recovering drug addict. I can't remember what Rhonda's story is, but they all come from somewhere that sent them to an alternative school.
Well, they wouldn't be there if they didn't have problems.
Well, that's just it. So they share this kinship of being troubled kids.
So when Precious escapes Mary after the TV incident, being thrown at her head, and her baby for that matter, she stays with Blue, because of course it's Blue Rain. What a name. And then she ends up in a halfway house, and we hear about the dad dying of AIDS. And we know Precious has AIDS, just to tack on even more to us.
Dude.
God, this poor girl has it bad enough, and now she's got a disease that back in 1987 probably puts her in the grave. And that leads me to what happens next. We can finally do this, because it's not a sequelized movie. We've been covering so many movies with sequels, so we know what's going
to
happen next.
Do we want to do the what happens next with this movie?
Because she probably dies of AIDS. The kids go back to Grandmama, and Mary gets even more money from the welfare, because she's got two grandkids that she's supposedly keeping in her house that she's probably not keeping in her house because they're with her mother.
It's sad because the hope lies with those kids, but it's really hard to imagine a future. It's sad to say, but Mongo's future is written for her. There's only so many options for her because she has Down syndrome. But Abdul's future, he has potential. I can't imagine a world where he realizes it. Oh, there's an interesting character in the film that we haven't really talked about much. I can't remember her name, but the little girl that lives in the same building as Precious.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever Precious's situation is, this little girl must be pretty goddamn bad because she is constantly clamoring Precious for attention. Before she makes her friends in the alternative school, this little girl is the only person that seems to really want Precious, really want her attention. And yet, instead of giving her attention, Precious treats her like garbage. The hate trickles down. All the frustration that she feels in her life from all the bullying she gets in her life, she then administers to this little girl who has matted hair. We see her in the alley sitting around garbage. She probably has a parent somewhere, but they're clearly not caring for her.
The irony is that towards the end of the film, or at least at one point, when Precious is in the social worker's office, she's in the waiting room, she gives her scarf to a kid and reminds me of Hurley in Lost. She takes care of people, and yet you're reminding me that when it comes to that one kid that she would know even more than this kid at an office, she didn't take care of her.
I think in the end they have a sweet moment together. And she finally comes around to her.
And she is trying compassion. To be a good mother, so obviously she's got potential to do the right thing.
She really loves her kids.
The last shot reminded me of a movie that came a couple years later. I think Oprah might have been involved in that one. The Help, which I didn't like, is a movie in general, although there's some great stuff in it. That one had Viola Davis walking off, I'm gonna rise above. I forget what the song was, but I remember mocking it to you and you laughed. But this, hopeful is probably not the right word for it, but hope possibility ending when Precious walks off with her kids out of that social worker's office right after the scene, the best scene in the movie, I guess, with Miss Weiss and her mother. And we just said it, she's probably not going to live too many more years because she's got AIDS in 1987, and she's not going to get the best help. She's not going to have Magic Johnson's money, as That's South Park so aptly
even rich
made
people
fun of.
Still died of AIDS.
Money
in
can cure AIDS.
87. Yeah. But poor people are still dying from HIV.
What did you think of that last bit? Did you feel hopeful, or did you feel not hopeful?
Man. Her remaining years, at least, aren't going to be spent under the yoke of that abusive monster that she was living with. So whatever her remaining years are, they're going to be better than they would have been. If that is the grain of hope that this movie has. Oh, you know, something briefly we didn't talk about yet was the fantasy sequences. We haven't really gotten all that deep into them. Precious fantasizes about the same things most teenage girls fantasize about. A handsome boyfriend who adores them, fancy clothes, fame, adulation, some kind of talent that makes them valuable and beloved. And the fantasies are this really stark contrast to her reality, where not only as far away as possible from the world that she dreams about, she's personally so far away from the person she fantasizes to be. In those fantasies, as you said, Sidibe's charisma really comes through, but in the real world, she is very stoic and closed off.
Yeah, Precious will never be that person, even if she had opportunity to do it.
It's extra heartbreaking then when she gets her HIV diagnosis. It robs her of her fantasies, because there's a scene after she finds out that she's sick. She's looking out the window. She sees her fantasy boyfriend on a motorcycle. He's holding out a helmet for her. And then he just dissolves away, because she knows that even she now cannot imagine a future where she is happy, because her future has been robbed from her by this disease. And she can't even pretend to entertain hope. It was an interesting choice for filmmakers to give her a terminal disease, because it puts it over the edge. This is just so bleak.
This movie is so different than the other Best Picture nominees that year, because it was Avatar, Hurt Locker, Up in the Air, Inglourious Basterds, and this. I like Up in the Air quite a bit, too. Hurt Locker, war film. Avatar, fantasy. Also becomes a war film in a lot of ways. Sci-fi, of course. Inglourious Basterds, revisionist war film. And then this, which was so different than anything we'd seen before. That got to that level of Best Picture, because like I said, Spike Lee never directed a Best Picture nominee. And he finally did, of course, do that this past year. But this does really stand out, doesn't it? And maybe things started changing finally in the late 2000s. And then again, Oscars So White was not that long ago. And it was after this movie came out.
Yeah.
And wasn't it after 12 Years a Slave, too?
I can't remember what year it was, but yeah, something
was.
Like 2014, maybe.
Well, that's after 12 Years a Slave, then.
Yeah.
Good God. Well, Lee Daniels did direct this movie. Another thing, we mentioned that Paula Patton's character is gay, but so is Lee Daniels. And I think he's one of the rare people that's out as well. I'm sure a lot of gay directors have been nominated for that award before, but he's out, or I think he was then. He certainly is now. He did do The Paperboy. There's a weird-ass film.
Yeah.
And then The Butler, which was okay. Great cast, outstanding actors. Some of them are weirdly cast in the roles of various presidents, but that movie's all about Oprah playing the wife of the butler, who is Forrest Whitaker. So this was a quick shoot, not surprisingly. I thought he directed it fine, except for some of those cutaways. I didn't love some of the moments.
Oh, you didn't like the fantasy stuff?
No, the fantasy stuff is okay. I think it's just during the rape, when it's imagining frying eggs. Because, yes, she has good imaginations as well during the rape. We don't see a ton of the rape. We see enough. But that's such a weird touch. I mean, that's just what he does. He likes to have these weird moments. A lot of really good directors, and he's a talented director, do things that you can never really reconcile in any film. And that's one of those things. What are you doing showing that? He's remaking Terms of Endearment, incidentally. I don't think there's been a cast yet. It just says, I think, in development on the IMDb. Maybe it won't happen. I've mentioned other movies, and they look it up later, that were in development that are not in development anymore. So maybe that'll happen with him, too. But there's an interesting one. And if he does cast black actors, it could be a very fascinating film. As for his writer, Jeffrey Fletcher has only written 3 scripts. A lot of shorts, though. That's mostly what's on his resume. He's working on Attica. I guess they're finally making a movie about that. So the Dog Day Afternoon thing. Attica. And it is based on the 1996 novel Push by Sapphire, her only movie adaptation. She hasn't written a lot that I'm aware of, but this is the only one so far that's been made into a movie. And we mentioned that Daniels, Gary Magnus, and Sarah Siegel Magnus produced along with Tyler and Oprah as executives. The movie's 185-1. We watched the DVD. Thought it was adequate. Not a really a great-looking movie. I don't think Daniels is known to be a visual stylist. In the movies he produced, I think he produced Monsters Ball, didn't he? With Halle
Berry. He did.
And that wasn't a visual movie.
Another example of getting an incredible performance out of an actor.
He was a producer, though, not a director.
Fine. He was a producer, not a director. But Halle Berry's never been better, right? And real dressed down in that movie, too.
Cinematographer on this, Andrew Dunn, shot Crazy Stupid Love and The Butler. The editor, Joe Klotz, cut Junebug and the four movies Daniels has directed. And then the composer, Mario Grigoroff, did music for The Paperboy and the other Daniels picks, or at least some of the other Daniel picks he's done. So what do you think of the look, the cutting, and the score?
The technicals might reveal the budget a little bit. From an editor's perspective, I feel like I would have made some different choices.
There's not much story here, and the movie's not too long, but it's fairly long for a movie that's pretty straightforward and simple.
No, it's not too long, and it never feels boring. I definitely would have cut down some of Monique's extra long diatribes of yelling obscenities and cruelties at Precious.
That's what I'm saying. I think maybe some of that
veers into the torture porn, right?
Well, we just covered Saw last week, so that makes some sense.
Yeah.
We've seen some cheap productions lately. Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Saw, to some degree Nightmare on Elm Street, not quite as cheap a production as those other two, and maybe even this. Interview with the Vampire is the only big budget production we've watched in quite a few weeks now.
True. But in the interest of just portraying a story that doesn't get too maudlin, I guess.
And not a technical movie.
What it really shines is the performances.
It's a performance. Sidibe
is outstanding. Monique is unforgettable and incredible.
But Sandra Bullock won the Oscar for Best Actress this year, and that was definitely a career achievement more than from that one movie, The Blind Side, which I've only ever seen once and enjoyed it just fine. One of the few movies it's ever had, especially in the recent era, two nominations only, but one of them being Best Picture. Oprah was involved in one of those as well, though, because, of course, The Blind Side, Best Picture, and it won for Best Actress. But the one that Oprah was involved with was Selma, Best Picture, and then it won for Best Song. That's the modern era, though, when you could have as many as 10 nominations for Best Picture, and there's usually been at least 7 or 8. All right, well, then last thoughts on Precious, based on the novel Push by Sapphire. We're legally obliged to say that. Or I can say, The Precious!
Not a perfect film, but it's very moving and so valuable as a window into someone who can so easily be invisible.
I'm glad the movie was made, and I'm glad I've seen it, I guess, 3 or even 4 times now. I don't think it's quite as hard to watch as some of those movies you mentioned before. Maybe because some of those are ongoing torture of these characters, like Passion of the Christ, or what happens in some of the Holocaust movies we've seen, like Schindler's List. But this is tough in the right way, in a good way. And Lee Daniels is a capable director, maybe not technically, but getting performances like this out of people like Mariah Carey and Monique Imes, or Imes, according to the internet. Her last name is I-M-E-S, Imes. And then a newcomer like Sidibe. Full credit for that. And even Lenny Kravitz's small role. He's so likable and sweet in this movie. Sherry Shepherd. The people that are in that classroom with her, nobody took off as a big star. Zosia, whatever her name is, Rookmore, as Joanne. How did she not get more roles? She's so likable and charming and fun. So he took a lot of people that didn't get a lot of work beyond this that I'm aware of, nothing big anyway, and made them really good, or even great in some cases, in this one movie.
And for a movie that I have not been tempted to watch over and over again because it's just so gutting and tough to digest, I am impressed how much I remembered about it. There are so many impressionable moments and really emotionally impactful things that happen in the movie that have stuck with me. If that's not a mark of a great film, what is?
Also, one more thing about the racism that people could say, if it wasn't a black director, then this wouldn't be acceptable. It's also 10 years ago. We looked at things a little differently then. And to me, this feels real. So had it been a white director, if it had been Ron Howard that made this movie and people said, how dare he make a movie like this and make all black people seem like they're this kind of person, it would still, if it was exactly like this, to me, feel real.
And if there are movies being made in Hollywood about all kinds of different black people, then this would no longer be outstanding as an example. The very next year after this came out, Winter's Bone came out, and nobody saw that movie and said, well, now you're just making all white people look like poor hillbilly degenerates.
She's got an even harder time of life than Precious does, maybe.
It is another very hard to watch film about a child in distress.
Also a new coming actress, Jennifer Lawrence, had not done anything that I'm aware of at that point.
It's actually a really excellent movie, but another one that I haven't really wanted to revisit because it's just so effective and tough. But nobody looks at that movie and says, well, this is representing all white people. You're making us all look like meth-addicted hillbillies. If there were just simply more movies about black people, then nobody will look at something like this and say, well, you're, of course, portraying this one single person's experience, but it's racist because it is insinuating that all black people are like that. No, this is a stupid thing to say. If the circumstances were different, then it wouldn't even be part of the conversation. It's indicative of a systematic problem.
All right, in 7 days, it will be Veterans Day in America. So because of that, and because we haven't covered nearly enough movies from 1999, nor anything George Clooney has been in, apart from Gravity, we covered that for the Now Playing Project, but not really a full-on planned podcast where we did research and all that.
Hard to believe.
So let's talk about Three Kings. I said Veterans Day in America. It's also Remembrance Day here in Canada, which is a holiday for the CBC. Me, I'll be working, but I'll get paid more. But most of you will not.
I just have to work like
I'll take the extra money and be happy. So the coming attractions trivia for Three Kings. It has a great scene showing what happens to your body when you're shot. How many of the four guys, or four main characters, take a bullet in the movie? In which order are they shot? And how many of them die from their wounds?
No fair.
You just saw the movie last night. Some of that should be right in your mind.
I should have been taking notes. So for the answer to that question, please check out our next podcast about Three Kings. In the meantime, you can check out our website, top100project.com. Don't forget to favorite or subscribe to the Top 100 Project on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, where all of our over 300 episodes are available for free. That includes all 123 movies that made the AFI's 1998 and or 2007 list of the best American films ever made, and many, many more titles. In exchange for all this content, perhaps you could give us a rating and a review. We are both on Twitter. I am at BevEllisEllis. Ryan is at MovieFiend51. Or you can reach us by email, top100projectpodcast@gmail.com. And once more, we would like to thank our sponsor, Spark Plug Coffee. Don't forget that you can enjoy a one-time 20% discount on any coffee purchase if you use the promo code top100project at checkout. That's all one word, top100project, and it's not case sensitive.
So should we go watch the other movie called Push That Ear? This should have been called
We're
Push.
We're obligated, yes.
Nah, who cares? This was enough.
And cut.
I'm sure there was a lot less TV throwing in that version of Push.